here. Before we begin, we have scheduled the annual financial audit for January the 16th. We need a volunteer to help the deacons, somebody from the congregation, unrelated to the deacons. You don't find out any great information like how much anybody's giving. All you do is confirm that the facts and the figures are correct, that whatever the offering was deposited into the bank, and that there's no funny things going on with the money. So January 16th, we need a volunteer for that. See Bill, if you would. Going forward into next year, Donna's going to be in charge of the setup schedule. We need to get that. At this point, we don't have to break anything down. We can leave everything where it is for now. But as a part of setup, one of the things we do is disinfect the tables and the arms of the chairs and the pulpit area and all of that before class. You don't have to haul the tables in and out anymore, which is nice. and we are looking into some other options. We're going to check into what sort of filters they're using for this room. Maybe add some an ozone maker or two to help disinfect and all of that. We haven't had any problems, obviously, because I think, fortunately, everybody in the congregation is smart enough to know if you're sick, stay home. You know, and don't call me, hey, I'm sick, should I stay home? Yes. That's always going to be my answer. It's never going to vary. But if you've had any kind of things, obviously now at this point, it's wise to get a COVID test if you have any issues. Nobody's had any that I know of, and anybody that's had the test, we had one person who had it positive, I guess, but they've subsequently tested negative and went through it with a minimum of symptoms and all of that and problems, as typically most people are going to. I've seen related information on four different things now just for your information. And when one considers all of this from the very beginning and the numbers and all, number one, the numbers of cases are perhaps woefully underinflated. You think, well, they would tend to exaggerate. But there's probably a lot more cases that have never been reported, which really skews the numbers in terms of the mortality rate. But I've seen four different things from four different sources, and they all came to the same conclusion that the actual mortality rate is 0.2% on this thing. That means 99.8% of people who get it will recover. That's all that means. And the mortality rate, as we know, is higher for people with pre-existing conditions, comorbidities, and other factors. We know that those are dangerous. If you're 90 years old and a heart condition, this thing will probably kill you. But how much longer are you going to live anyway? And they'll blame it on COVID, but it could have just been your heart gave out. And we don't know. So anything that's tested positive with that, they've limited or laid it off to COVID, when in fact it may have been something else that was the cause of death. That may have contributed to it. I'm not saying it couldn't have contributed, but it may not have ever been the cause of death. At any rate, we still are going to sanitize. You have to do that on Sunday. One thing we have decided to do is if you are traveling out of state or coming in here from out of state, we're going to ask that the first 7 days you wear a mask if you come here for Bible class. That may be an abundance of caution, but when people come from COVID hotspots, and we looked at some of these things on the map yesterday, certain places, we know we have some people coming from Oklahoma over the next month or two, and their infection rate's double what it is here. So that's significant. And rather than, we'll take a little bit extra caution, and that's fine. And but again, as I've said before, people that aren't sick can't spread disease. You have to be sick to spread disease. So we don't know who all's sick, but if you're coming from out of state or any of that, we're going to sort of institute a 7-day. You just have to wear a mask. You can come to class. Many of the people, if they've already been doing this, they've already had to wear masks wherever they assembled anyway, because they don't have the great setup we have where we're isolated. Nobody's here but people who we know are well. And so failure to attend Bible class is not becoming acceptable anymore using COVID as an excuse, because it's not really an excuse any longer. Now that we know that the mortality rate is really, really very low on this and all of that. But ironically enough, people don't have any trouble going to amusement. That's what we suggested yesterday, that maybe we should sell tickets to amusement parks and we could get people here. But we're not going to do that. The reality is we are doing that. Also, another explanation. Because of the nature of this year and the way it played out, and at certain cases, in the beginning stages when we weren't really sure and we're trying to be cautious, we, for instance, told nurses not to come to Bible class for the initial stages of it. So because of that, and because people missed some because of this year, because of that, and we also had trouble, as you know, we assembled in a home for 2 weeks, or 2 months, I'm sorry, probably seem a lot longer if it's your home. Because of that, what we've decided to do this year, we're going to grace everyone out, and we're not going to actually review our membership roll. But let me tell you this. Going forward, we're not going to allow a bunch of excuses. If you're here half the time or less, you're going to be dropped from the membership of this local church. Know that. There's be no exceptions. Nobody gets any favoritism. We only review this annually in January, but should it turn out that for some reason you're out of town or whatever you're doing for the last 3 months of the year and we haven't seen you, you likely will be removed as well unless you've made some previous arrangements as to why you're not in Bible class. So one of the things that has become very clear is that people in Bible class also aren't really applying towards other believers very well. And that's a fact. They don't see them. You don't have fellowship. They never come in contact with them. And to say that that's what a local church is, we maybe have to go back and review Ephesians 4, but I'm pretty sure that's not what it is. I think we're supposed to be here to build each other up, to grow up spiritually, to challenge one another, to encourage one another, and all of that as is necessary, so that none of us are hardened by the deceitfulness of the old sin nature. And it is deceitful. Just know that going forward, if you're not consistent in Bible class, and we can't really pick just a number and say, it has to be the general sense of the three deacons that you're not here much, or the two deacons and me, that you're not here a sufficient amount of time. And you may want to do yourself a favor and get a calendar. Buy yourself a little $3 calendar and keep track on it how often you miss Bible class, and you may be stunned at how little time you're here. This year, we're going to grace everybody out. We're going to say, okay, we're starting again fresh next year. But if Bible class attendance isn't consistent and you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing as a believer, we will remove you from the membership roll. So, and we will do it sadly. We won't want to. But the reality is we have to use whatever at our advantage here in order to encourage people, to exhort them to do the right thing. And that's what we want to do. We want to encourage you to do the right thing. So in regard back to, by the way, the setup schedule, we need to fill that out for 2021. So figure out when you can apply in that regard and see Donna on that instead of Bill. Okay, I think that's everything for today. So we'll continue on here now. If any of that got you out of fellowship, I guess rebound. We're on subpoint I here, under major point 5, that the fool engages in a lot of unprofitable speech because he has to share his mind on everything. He can't help himself at that level. And his speech, again, verges on stupidity to start with, but gets into insanity at some point. And that's not what you want. So we close there with point 5, meddling in affairs that do not pertain him. Believers are to recognize, we are to love one another, support one another. You have to know general things about other believers, to pray for them intelligently. And as I've encouraged everybody here, if you have a prayer request and you want me to announce it, let me know. But other than that, you've got the email list. On the contact list, everybody's email is there. Send out an email to everybody. Don't wait for me to announce it. Yes, but particularly if you need prayer immediately, like if it's pressing. Because we may not have a Bible class for a half a week or a week or something, just depending on what happens. So we have to be involved in one another's lives without meddling in one another's lives. There's a fine line to walk here. And to care about people and to pray for them intelligently, you have to have some information. So this is a part of being accountable to one another in the local body. And this is something that's just not very much stressed in many churches, is that we have obligations to one another as members of the same body. So foolish speech in general comes from him, which not only proceeds from him, but on which he apparently thrives. This is the sad thing with the fool. The things that should interest him don't. And many of the things that shouldn't interest him do. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. And then verse 14, the mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge, but the mouth of fools feeds on folly. So 7, the fool is the type of person that believes because he thinks something. And I should have put in here he, she, because it's every believer. I just tend to use the masculine pronoun when I'm dealing with an individual, which doesn't make me a misogynist or anything else. This has been common practice, literary practice, for decades, centuries even, to use a masculine pronoun. So he thinks because he or she thinks something, it must be right. And I've met people like that. I think it's right. No, it's not right just because you think it. It's right if it's right. Doesn't matter who thinks it or doesn't think it. So therefore, he loves to share his mind on all matters, even those about which he actually knows nothing. And that doesn't slow people down, as you know. Lack of knowledge doesn't slow some people down. It should. You ought to be wise enough to admit there's things you don't know, things you don't understand. I know yesterday when we were having our board meeting, I was talking about air cleaning and all of this. I said, well, I know Pete knows way more about this than I do, and probably the rest of us, so let me consult him. So know where your resources are. If it comes to mathematics, I'm probably a big help. You know, I can do 2 + 2. And as you probably can tell sometimes from my notes, when it comes to grammar or writing, well, maybe I'm not the guy to consult on that. You might want to get somebody else for that. Well, know where people's strengths are and be prepared to avail yourselves of that. There's no shame in admitting you're wrong or you don't know. There is to the ego. The ego doesn't like it. But there's actually no shame. The wise person admits, I don't know. I'm not clear on that. Let me find somebody who is. And that was one of the things I was told, strangely enough, even at a shoe store. If a customer asks a question about a shoe, you never say, I don't know. You don't just admit that you're incompetent. You say, you know, let me go check on that. And you go check on it. Go find out somebody who does know. And if you can be train people to do that in a shoe store, which you could, it wasn't hard, then you should be able to convince believers, hey, we don't all know everything. It'd be nice if we did, but we don't. And so we look to people who might be able to help us. A fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind. They're more than happy to tell you what they think. Well, guess what? I know what the fool thinks already. I don't need to hear it from him again and again and again and again to know what he thinks. I know his thinking is not correct. Well, 8, although fools babble on and on, they are members of that group on and on and on. The wise man is instructed. You got that, did you? There you go. The wise man is instructed to discern the folly of the fool and avoid it. So we have to think about who's talking to you. Number one, is this a person that seems stable to you spiritually? Are they consistent in Bible class? All that. That's the first things I would ask. Are they oriented in a sense as I can tell? And I mean, I'm not perfect at judging. Nobody is. But you have a general sense of people and what they want in life and what they're doing. And this is one of the things, because God the Holy Spirit working, it's harder to fool me than you might think. Because God the Holy Spirit, from time to time, lets me know stuff. And typically I have found out that I get the information when I need it. Not before, not after. Just when I need it. But a good authority at any level, one who's in responsibility, a position of leadership, you got to want to know the truth without meddling. You have to know certain things in order to intelligently address things. But this is great because, like I say, God the Holy Spirit can provide information you need, just as He can to you when you walk in fellowship. It's not as though that's unique to the pastor. Any believer can have that. Proverbs 10:8, the wise of the heart will receive commands, but a babbling fool will be ruined, as you might expect. Verse 10, he who winks the eye causes trouble. This is usually a signal. The wink of the eye here signals that something untoward is up, something that's not obvious maybe. And a babbling fool will be ruined. So that was verse 10 there. A babbling fool will be ruined. Also, 1 Timothy 6:20. And this is one of the issues Timothy is warned to avoid in terms of his function. Timothy, the young protege of Paul. Oh, Timothy, guard what has been entrusted to you, avoiding worldly and empty chatter. Again, the talking heads on TV, I can't take much of it. It's just worldly and empty chatter for the most part. And you have two competing factions out there, the right wing and the left wing. You have the liberals and the conservatives, and they're always fighting it out over something. You know, that whatever the issue is, they're divided on it. And so that's what they sow, strife, division, this sort of thing. So guard worldly and empty chatter, and avoiding the arguments of what is falsely called knowledge. Some people think they're really smart. They think they're really capable because they, quote, got the knowledge, they think. And in some cases, they don't even have it. And in some cases, what they have isn't really the truth, which some have professed and thus gone astray from the faith. And that's one of the biggest things, of course, the thing that does believers in the most is failing. Is just they lose faith. They lose confidence in the truth. The truth is truth whether you lose confidence in it or not. Truth doesn't change. But believers can. And I've watched them. Certain doctrines people used to embrace and accept, they no longer do. They blew them off. Separation's a big one because they want to go out and be free to hobnob with the cosmos. Well, I don't. That doesn't mean anything to me. So this can take you down. Bad information that you accept and all of that. You got to be careful about that. And again, if you ever have any questions, hey, I heard this and such and this and such, shoot me an email. I'll tell you if I think it's right. I'm not bashful, but make sure you want to know before you ask. Don't play that game. Well, I'll ask, but I don't really want to hear what they have to say. Well, don't bother. Don't waste my time or anybody's. Also, 2 Timothy 2:23. But refuse. One of the things you got to watch out for is getting into these verbal battles over anything. And particularly over non-essentials of doctrine. It's one thing if you're having to contend earnestly for the faith. In other words, you're in a conflict with somebody and it's about whether Jesus had a sin nature or not. You can blow them off. And don't waste your time. No, Jesus didn't have a sin nature at all. He didn't sin. He not only didn't have a sin nature, he didn't sin. Didn't commit a personal sin. And people want to argue about the age of the earth, dinosaurs, this, that. Don't waste your time. It's a waste of time. It doesn't accomplish anything. And there are certain things that the wise believer is smart enough to recognize we don't know. We don't know what the age of the earth is, and why do we care? We don't. We shouldn't. It doesn't matter how old the earth is. What we can say of a certainty is that man has been on the planet less than 6,000 years. So when you see stuff, remains, and they're 10,000, 100,000-year-old human remains, no. That's absolutely impossible. That cannot happen. It is simply an illusion that's been, however they've done it, it's not real. Because man hasn't been on the planet that long. So their dating systems are fallacious. Well, carbon 12 is not a great dating system, frankly. It requires a couple of things that you don't have. The first is a closed system, which you can't have here. And the second is a uniformitarian sort of state. You can't have these wild upheavals in nature. But those have never happened, right? Well, of course they have. So refuse foolish and ignorant speculations. Why? Because they produce quarrels. You don't want to spend your time sitting around arguing over something that doesn't matter. And particularly, as I say, non-essentials of doctrine. We're coming up on Christmas. Woohoo! Well, first, Christmas is a bogus holiday invented. It came straight out of the pagans. Go read about Saturnalia and you'll find out what it is. It's not Jesus' birthday. Jesus was born sometime in September. Think about the 15th or 11th or somewhere in there. And Jesus, of course, in the whole, and if, when you see the nativity scene and the wise men are there at the manger with the baby, none of that's right. It's all wrong. So don't engage in stuff that's patently false. On the other hand, if you want to celebrate Christmas, if you want to get your little Nimrod, your Christmas tree, and decorate it and all of that, we don't care. We're not going to make fun of that. That's a personal, individual choice. It's not a matter of sin. Now, if you start praying to the Christmas tree, yeah, we'll take issue with that. But, and you can read, you know, and somebody saying you want to read some of this stuff, you know, this goes back to the ancient pagan cults. It goes as far back as Genesis, this business. And so the mother-son cult is ancient. But just know, you know, okay, this holiday is not what they say it is. The wise men came about a year and 3 or 4 months later. They weren't at the manger. They didn't show up there at all. They were in a house. So it says that clearly in the text. Don't let that slow you down, though. That it says they came to the house where Jesus was. And he was in a house, not in a barn, in a feeding trough. You know. These things, why argue about all of this, though? How's anybody advanced with that? You just want to be as accurate as you can be and let people do what they're going to do out there. Non-essentials like Christmas or dancing. Historically, things that is like Southern Baptists, I was taught against. Christmas, mm-hmm. Dancing, dipping, drinking. We don't smoke and we don't chew and we don't go with girls that do. And that was an old saying. Rudy Toot Toot, we are the boys from the Institute. Well, legalism is not worth arguing over either. Now, is smoking cigarettes a sin? No. Bible's not against that. Is it healthy? No. Should you do it? Probably not. But if you do, we're not going to throw you out of the church over that. It's a non-essential. And so what people drink, they drink wine, they don't drink wine, they celebrate holidays, they don't celebrate holidays. Whatever you do, go back and review the notes on Romans 14 if you have any questions. We addressed all of this at length. And what we are to try to do as believers is to do those things that build each other up, that encourage one another, that make applications. This encourages believers. And it accrues reward to you if you're doing it right. And so you may be on the other end of the deal sometime. You may need to be encouraged. And a believer, let believers apply towards you. You can't be arrogant about this. I know for men, and especially self-sufficient men that are raised kind of from my generation and even back before that, I've noticed a lot of men are happy to do things for other people, but they don't want you doing anything for them. Well, as a man, you got to get over that. As a Christian man, you got to get over it. It may be that some lowly, quote, believer in the local church could be a big help to you. But we have to be willing to receive. It is more blessed to give than to receive. But you know what that means? It's blessed to receive. It's just more blessed to give. But we have to be gracious, grace-oriented, and be able to take correction, help, all these things, and all of that. So the Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome. We don't want to sit around arguing with people. But kind to all, able to teach, patient when wrong. I struggle with that one. I'll tell you straight out. I don't have the trouble with teaching. It's just when somebody gets in my face, my first tendency is to get right back at them. And so I have to fight all that. You have to fight the tendency. We saw it in Romans there 12. Do not take your own revenge. Leave room for the wrath of God. God will take care of this. But see, that's where people don't have faith. That's where you struggle with faith. Well, will God really make this right? I know I can. But no, yeah, we have to trust that God will. with gentleness, correcting those that are in opposition, if perhaps God may grant them repentance, a change of mind leading to the knowledge of the truth. And these are believers he's talking about here. He's not talking about how to deal with unbelievers. This would apply to them, certainly. We don't go out there and antagonize unbelievers or this or that. But believers, so that they may come to their senses. See, there are a lot of believers that have lost their minds. They think they're okay before God, but they're actually insane, spiritually. They're actually out of it. They have some sort of mental illness that convinces them they don't have to obey God, but they're fine with it. Well, the Bible, my Bible doesn't suggest that at all. And they may escape from the snare of the devil. The fact is, the devil's got these people trapped. And our warfare is not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities and the world forces of this darkness that enslave believers. So you got believers out there that are captives that run around doing Satan's will and claim they're oriented to God. But this is what we have to deal with. And we want to try to win those people, if at all possible. But if they won't listen, you can't win. That's one of the things that Peter or Timothy was told. You pay close attention to yourself and your teaching, because some people are just not going to pay close attention to it. But you have to be on top of it. So there, and also the last one, Titus 3:9. And this is where it gets really serious, because you got believers that are running around and they're just actually literally Satan's errand boys. They're his pawns. And they act like they're okay with God. Well, they're not. Same similar idea here. Avoid foolish controversies and genealogies and strife. That was one of the big things in their day, was the genealogies, allegorizing them, inserting names, doing all manner of things. Genealogies are fine when studied in the proper context. But when you start manipulating the data and all that, well, they're not fine then. And if you take it beyond the Bible. And disputes about the law, for they are unprofitable and worthless. So reject a factious man after a first and second warning. If you're dealing with a person that's just argumentative, that's a fool, essentially, that genders strife and wants to debate everything. And we've had a couple of those pass through here in this local church. And after a point, I gave him two warnings, and then I said, don't approach me again. Don't approach me with this again. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about it. And so you give them a warning, and then you tell them, you continue this behavior, you're going to be out. And this isn't personal on my part. This is a protection for the other sheep, because people that are like that sow discord as they go. They're not just wanting to argue, they're wanting to create discord and strife. And if that's the kind, and we don't have a lot of that here now that I know of at all. Maybe none at all, which is good. We shouldn't have. That's not the kind of person you really want. Well, after a first and second warning, knowing that such a man is perverted and sinning and is self-condemned. I don't even have to say that the man is a factious guy. Stay away from him. He's condemned himself by his behavior. And the fool is condemned, self-condemned, and then walks around acting like he's okay with God. That's how foolish people can be. Well, 9, occasionally even the fool recognizes that saying something would remove any doubt about his status. So occasionally he might remain quiet. It happens. It's rare, but it happens. Proverbs 17, 28. So it's not necessarily his M.O., it's not his modus operandi, but it's the way he will occasionally do. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. Sometimes, you know, just keep that. Sit there and keep your mouth shut. People might think you're smarter than you are. There's something to be said for that. When he closes his lips, he's considered prudent. It's just that he doesn't do it very much. That's the sad thing. Well, Jay, in that regard, a wise person, even a discerning outsider, simply has to observe a fool. And it will become apparent, if he's intellectually honest himself, it'll become apparent. If it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. If it walks like a fool and talks like a fool and doesn't shut up, it's a fool. You don't have to guess about this stuff. So it'll become apparent that he's observing a fool. Proverbs 13, if you're discerning and thinking, you'll see this. And again, we want to make distinctions between the fact that we all act foolish occasionally. So when you see a person, maybe they're just having a bad day. Don't assume if somebody's in Bible class and they're acting like an idiot one day. I've been known to do it. Don't assume I've gone negative or that I'm, you know, lost all my doctrine. I haven't. I may just be having a bad day. I'm beginning to think there's such a thing as bad decades, but I'm not sure about that one yet. Every prudent man, verse 16 here, acts with knowledge. But a fool displays folly. You can see it. He makes it plain. His behavior is evident if you just want to look at it. And also Ecclesiastes 10:3. And here's another good deal here in verse 2, actually. A wise man's heart directs him towards the right. But the foolish man's heart directs him towards the left. And he'll stand there and argue with the wise man and try to convince the wise man that, hey, you should be going to the left too. Even though he's a fool, he's going the wrong direction. And that's one of the things in the local church where you have this unity that we talked about and looked at back at the beginning of chapter 4. The unity of the Spirit. The Holy Spirit produces unity among like-minded believers. When believers aren't like-minded, they're not unified. And it becomes very evident when a believer's not walking in sync with the other soldiers. You ever see that? You know, like F Troop? If you remember, those of you who remember that show? Yeah, I know. And they'd be marching. Or Gomer Pyle's more recent. Gomer'd always be out of step, you know, with the troop. Well, that tells you there's something wrong. If you're out of step with the troop and all the rest of the soldiers are marching to the same beat, and you're out of step with it, probably a hint something's wrong. Or you can take the alternate opinion and be a fool. Oh, I'm right because I think it, and the whole troop's going the wrong direction. The leadership's been going the wrong direction. The soldiers are going the wrong. All of them's going the wrong direction but me. Oh, you're a law to yourself then. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, that's exactly what you're saying. That you're smarter than the rest of the positive believers around you. You think you know more. Well, you don't. But even when a fool walks along the road, his sense is lacking. And he demonstrates to everyone that he's a fool. You can observe him and see that's stupid. Just look at him. And it'll commend itself to you, unfortunately. Well, Kay, given the fact that the fool is referred to in so many contexts with other categories of persons, it should not be surprising to find that he has a lot in common with the sluggard, the scoffer, and other undesirable types. There are certain behaviors that are just downright stupid. For instance, we talk about this matter of smoking cigarettes. Is smoking cigarettes a sin? Not biblically, no. But if you smoke two packs of Camel non-filters every day, there's a chance you're going to have a negative outcome somewhere down the road. My dad did. Went and had a full physical like a month before and then suddenly just fell over dead with a heart attack. No explanation, no warning, no nothing. So why? Two-pack of non-filter Camel smoker a day. I suspect that had something to do with it. But the reality is if you engage in these dangerous behaviors, risky behaviors, you're probably going to get the outcome from it, unfortunately. So Proverbs 1:22. How long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? That's untrained, unlearned people. And scoffers, how long will you delight yourself in scoffing? And fools hate knowledge. So you got the simple-minded, the scoffer, and the fool. Which one do you want to be? None of the above? That would be point D, none of the above. And also 19:1. And of course, all these things come out of this perverse speech, strife, the types of things the fool engenders as he blunders his way through life. Again, I can't improve on that. The fool is the gutter ball of the Christian life. He's missed everything. And you don't want to be that. Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than he who is perverse in speech and is a fool. Also, it is not good for a person to be without knowledge. And he who hurries his footsteps errs. The foolishness of a man ruins his way. And his heart rages against the Lord. Now, here's what I've observed. The fool does indeed have a problem with God. But he won't admit it. He won't admit it. He'll say the problem's with somebody else, with a human. The problem's with the pastor, with the deacons, with somebody in the local church. The problem's not the fool. It's everybody else. And you see this today. This has become rampant in society where parents shield their children from all the consequences of their stupidity and their action. And they say, as one of our children tried to say, well, I want to learn, but that teacher's got it in for me. And she singles me out because, and I'm just doing bad. I'm just doing fine in there. I'm really trying, but the teacher hates me. Well, it turns out all the teachers hated him. And it was reflected in his grades. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe the problem wasn't the teachers. Maybe the problem was the fool who wanted to lay off his problems to somebody else. Don't allow your children or anybody to shift the blame to somebody else. If a person doesn't take responsibility for their own actions, they're a fool to start with. Personal responsibility is the hallmark of integrity. And if you want to be a person with integrity, somebody that people count on, they know you're solid. And I know believers like that, and I know believers that are flaky. I couldn't count on them to save my soul. Which one do you want to be? Because here's where it all starts, and it's constant, consistent attendance in Bible class, growing in grace and knowledge, being exposed to these concepts. And you can go home and read the Bible, but I suspect that you probably, hopefully, get more out of a Bible class when a human's actually addressing these things, another failure, another human that fails like you do, sins like you do, doesn't have any advantages over you. In that sense, I'm still a slave in God's household. And so that's the kind of person I would rather be with, is one who walks in his integrity. But again, don't be in a big hurry. This gets people into trouble. We tell people, pray about stuff. Wait, don't rush to do things. Because when you're rushing, you're going to make more mistakes. You've probably seen that in your own physical life. You're in a hurry to get something done, and what happens? I've got something that's distracting me. I back into the fire hydrant. Oops. Why? Because I was in a big hurry. And I've watched people. Now, of course, some of this I've grown up spiritually. I used to be one of those guys that was in a big hurry. I was going through traffic just like a lot of crazy people do now. And then I got older and realized, well, number one, what's my big hurry? All I had to do was leave 5 minutes early. That sure made it easier. And all of that. But it's dangerous. And fools engage in dangerous behavior. I watch people tailgating at 70 miles an hour. They're 6 feet off somebody's bumper. That's just death looking to happen. All that would have to happen is some little untoward thing and the person behind them would never be able to respond. But maybe they don't. See, we don't have driver's ed in the school. You know, how far should you... I saw an old Big Bang Theory the other day. Sheldon went to get his driver's license. How far should you follow behind the car in front of you? I don't know. How far? Well, it's car length for every 10 miles an hour speed. Well, a car length's not a standard unit of measure. I know that. I know it's not a standard unit of measure. But you have a general idea. If you're 70 miles an hour and you're 10 feet off somebody's bumper, you're too close. But we shouldn't have to tell people this. This should be self-evident. This used to be taught before you could get a driver license. You had to know stuff. And you had to be able to be responsible and handle a vehicle. So, again, he has a problem with all these other things. All right, point six here now, moving on. The results of the folly of the fool. As alluded in several points above, those that opt to reject wisdom, remain ignorant, and make foolish choices will eventually pay the price. It may take a while. It may happen quickly. We don't know. To some extent, it depends on God and what he wants to do in the matter. Well, B, the fool is often stupid enough to continue in his foolishness. Continued bad choices destine him to experience the consequences of those bad choices. And this is one of the things we see in God's fatherhood. As a great parent, God doesn't shield you from the mistakes and the consequences of your mistakes sometimes. He lets you get the discipline. He lets you get nailed. He lets me get nailed. And so Proverbs 26, 11. But we live in a cause and effect world, people. It's one thing to pray, "Dear God, protect me from my own stupidity." But to go out and practice that stupidity frequently or repeatedly is going to render that prayer kind of moot. Do you think God's just going to do that forever? Proverbs 26:11. Like a dog that returns to its vomit. Oh, that's a fun metaphor right before lunch. Is a fool that repeats his folly. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than him. And the fact is, the fool will continue to do the same stupid stuff. If you deliver a fool once, that's fine. If you deliver him twice, shame on you, you're going to keep doing it. And psychologists use these terms, enablers, who go around and try to shield people from the consequences of their stupidity and enable such behavior. No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to enable stupidity to where if we can help it. We're going to teach against it and stand against it. Proverbs 27:22. Oh, this is great. Having worked in the pharmacy, I really get this one. Mm-hmm. Though you pound a fool in a mortar with a pestle. Now, if you know what a mortar and pestle is, and if you don't, it's something that they use in pharmacy and other places too, but it grinds stuff. It's designed to grind stuff into powder. In other words, if you grind a fool down to dust, along with crushed grain, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. And so in certain cases, does God always lower the boom on him? Probably not, because God knows there's not going to be any benefit to it for him. And in other cases, he does. Some people pay the price for their folly immediately. Others pay it down the road. But always be advised, actions have consequences. It is a cause and effect relationship. So again, you can take a fool and you can do all kinds of divine discipline. You can judge him. He can go through all manner of things and he won't wake up. He won't look up and say, "Oh God," until he gets enough of it. Jonah is a good example of that among believers. He essentially said, "I'm leaving the ministry," gave God both fingers and ran in the opposite direction. And he said, "That's fine. This is what I'm going to do. It's my way. I'm not doing this. I'm not going to Nineveh," blah, blah, blah. Well, God got his attention. But when did Jonah finally look up? 20,000 leagues under the sea? I don't know how deep he was. But he said, "I was in Sheol," essentially the place of the dead. He didn't expect to survive that. Whatever that large animal, that fish was that swallowed him. People can debate. By the way, don't debate about that. What difference does it make? Whatever big animal was out there, maybe it's extinct now, I don't know. We know animals go extinct. The Greenpeace and all of them will tell us it's horrible, all the planet's going to die. But no, many animals have gone extinct, and the planet's still fine. But don't argue about how much did it take for him? I mean, when you're bound and tossed overboard, off of a ship, that's a pretty strong statement that they don't want you around. And God is maybe not having himself a little problem with you. But finally, Jonah looked up, to his credit, finally. Well, see, although the foolish may be deluded into believing that they have established themselves and are immune to judgment, wisdom dictates otherwise. There may be people who think, "I'm not getting jammed yet." But again, the operative word is yet. God may get a hold of you. And we would spare you all of that. That's kind of the purpose of all of this teaching, is to spare believers some of this stupidity, because in the Bible we have two kinds of examples, positive examples and negative examples. And sometimes it's the same person. For instance, you go back and look in the life of Sarah, and there was one incident back there in, I think, chapter 16, Operation Hagar. Sarah was completely misguided and doing all the wrong things. And then you look five chapters later in 21, and Sarah's given Abraham the divine viewpoint, and God's blessing her. So sometimes it can be the same person. Like with Peter. Peter makes this great confession: "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And then he says, "Oh, you're stupid. That'll never happen to you." Well, now, which is it? Those are kind of contradictory there. Job chapter 5, verse 3, I have seen the foolish taking root, and I curse his abode immediately. And sometimes God will jam the person quickly, other times not. If you're acting foolishly, if you're blowing off doctrine and God's not jamming you, that probably doesn't bode well. If he keeps you on a short leash and doesn't let you get away with much, you're probably better off. Because I've learned anything over the years, not only personally myself, but in observing believers, the more leeway you give them often, the more trouble they get into. And I find just keeping it simple, that acronym, keep it simple, stupid. Weed your garden, keep your niche, keep it to the straight and narrow. Don't deviate off here and here and here and here. There's all kinds of ways to deviate. Well, don't do them. Stick with the straight and narrow of the truth. And the adjusted believer doesn't want fools moving into his neighborhood, just as Job didn't. And the reality is you say, well, that's kind of cruel. Well, do you want criminals moving into your neighborhood? Do you want really stupid people moving into your neighborhood? Not if you can help it. And settling down? But I mean, obviously, we don't have any say-so now over any of this. But we recognize that some people are just bad news. Psalm 49 also, 11 through 13. And he's talking in context about here in verse 10. For he sees that even wise men die. The stupid and the senseless alike perish and leave their wealth to others. That's another thing to recognize about the nature of this temporal life you're living in. All your hard work is going to mean nothing at the end. All your acquisitions, all your money, all your details, all your retirement accounts, all your homes, your cars, everything you got, you're going to lose it. At the end, when you die, or get raptured, either way, you're still losing it all. And what's the good deal? Well, you may leave it to your children. This has been the great American dream. We amass a fortune, we die, we leave it to our kids, and guess what? Many times kids are just stupid. Even Solomon bemoaned that. What happens to all my stuff, he said, when I die? I might leave it to an idiot. Well, there's every good chance of that. And things that you have regard for, like I have, you know, nice regard for wine, and I like good wines and all that, but I wouldn't want to leave them to my son, who has no capacity for it whatsoever. Not at all. If I was going to leave it to somebody, I'd leave it to somebody at class. So Psalm here, 49:11. It's 49. Okay, I got you. So he sees that wise men die, stupid and the senseless both perish. Their inner thought. Now, the stupid and the senseless is that their thought is that their houses are forever. And then, again, when you're young, it's easy to think like this. Oh, I'm immortal. I can't die. Well, you can. And there are people, and you see it every day on the television, every day on the news, teenagers die because they're with the wrong people. They're doing stupid stuff. I think it's pretty good to build a bonfire on a cool night. I don't think it's wise throwing 5 gallons of gas on it. And that just happened. Kid's in a hospital with 80% of his body burned. Why? Wrong place at the wrong time with some other people that weren't very smart. So we know this kind of stuff happens all the time. And so there's these little lessons out there for us. Hey, by the way, God going, you're not immortal. Pay attention. Hello. I want your attention. And God, and learn from that. Well, their inner thought is that their houses are together and their dwelling places to all generations. They have called their lands after their own names. But man in his pomp will not endure. He is like the beasts that perish. This is the way of those that are foolish. And of those after them who approve their words. Oh my God, it's not bad enough that you got stupid people headed for destruction. You got other people defending them. And approving of what they've done. Well, they're fools too. And the world's full of these types of people, unfortunately. Well, wisdom literature would suggest that the wise will eventually be promoted, while the fool will become his servant in forced labor. Proverbs chapter 11, Our last one here today, Proverbs 11:29. He who troubles his own house will inherit the wind. And we've got another point coming up down here that are devoted only to the women, only to wives, about folly and foolishness. We don't get to it here till point K, but we'll get to that. But the foolish woman troubles her own house. The foolish man troubles his own house. And the foolish will be the servant to the wise-hearted. Which suggests, again, that foolish people will pay the price for their stupidity, but those who are wise and are pursuing God's plan will become the beneficiaries of their stupidity. The idea is that the fools suffer for their activities, while in other cases, other people are blessed in spite of the fact that the fools are around them. But of course, you don't want to hang around too many fools. They're going to do something stupid. It's not a matter of if, it's when. They'll do something stupid. You just don't want to be a part of it as a believer, if you can help it. All right, well, we're going to stop there today. I don't have enough time to get through the next point, so we'll leave that and pick up here on Tuesday. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship in the things of your word. We pray that your word would do that which you have sent it forth to do and would not return to you a void. For we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.